This is Dirt and Sprague.
Ours is a new love, but it burns very brightly, and it gets hot and sweaty and stanky. There's some stank on that love.
With Andy Dirt Johnson.
You think you're going to find somebody that's going to be like psyched to go to Applebee's with you every Friday night and hear the same football stories about how you rocked in high school?
I did rock in high school football. You want to check tape?
And Brendan Sprague.
You know about the cup sizes, no?
I have different cups.
Yeah, I know about the cup.
You got the A, the B, the C, the D. That's the biggest.
I know the D is the biggest. I based my whole life on knowing that the D is the biggest.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Hour two of three. Here we go, man. Got the best of my love over here, man. I'm having a good time, man. Thank you so much for allowing Will and I to grace you on this Friday as Dirt and Sprague are out. Swag, I appreciate you, my guy. I always say, man, for those of you who don't listen to Football or Sports Sunday every Sunday at 9 a.m.
You should.
You should. I don't get a chance to see a lot of people at the station. Yeah. Like, Will and I have been seeing each other a lot more lately.
Yeah, recently. We've done a couple shows.
We've done a couple shows together, but, you know, there was a time where I only saw one Jason Swigard at the Les Schwab Invitational. And that would be the only time throughout the year that we would see each other.
Yeah, especially since moving to the, morning slot. We're kind of are in our own little world.
Like, I never see 100%. Swag anywhere. And so, like, it's funny. I walk into the station sometimes, or I can remember doing it a while ago before we had new leadership in place. And I can remember people looking at me like, who the hell is this? The black dude just walking through the station, just, and everybody's talking to him and stuff like that. Is he a celebrity or something? I was like, nah, I'm never in the building. Like, it's pitch black when Joe and I and Jordan get here on Sundays. Right. There's nobody here. There's no janitors. There's no nobody's. And seriously, there's no front desk people. There's nobody here in the building. So it's always great to see my people, you know, throughout the week, especially on a day like today.
Well, I much appreciate you guys doing this.
Of course, man. Of course.
We had a best of show not long ago. Mm-hmm. And then Tuesday for the golf tournament. Now we take this in the office here on Wednesday. So you will get fresh content, each of our definitive top 10 NBA players of all time. Because we were making fun.
That's why you had the list.
Of all of the embrace debate shows that seemingly every debate then devolved into MJ or LeBron.
It's usually how it goes. I mean, if you're Nick Wright and people on Fox, then it's LeBron. If you're Stephen A. and ESPN, it's clearly Jordan. If you're the older heads, then you're saying Kareem. Like, I think that I don't think that's the conversation. Now we need to start saying who's fourth. No, I think that's where the conversation starts. I remember
So a full 2 hours of us breaking down our top 10 all-time NBA players.
I sneaky love
that. And then we'll have a little bit of draft prep, because the day after the golf tournament is the first round of the NBA draft. So we went out to BYU. We went out to Illinois, kind of get some background on Yegor Demin, on Jakachonis.
Such easy names to say.
Yeah.
Right.
And Jeremy Wu, draft analyst for ESPN, joined us recently too. So we'll get all the draft prep there. So that's what's coming up on Tuesday. So having to come up with 3 hours of other content today was not high on my list.
No.
Now, especially after holiday. So thank you guys for coming in.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Because it was a main office scuttlebutt. And I want to clear your name, because you are not a thief. You are not a sandwich thief. I do not believe that you would eat one Brandon Sprague sandwich.
No.
Did you hear about...
He stopped me in the thing, and I was like, what are you talking about? I bought Reggie's for us, and Dirt and I had no problem down in the Reggie Deluxe before we started.
Not at all.
Sprague apparently eats like a bird, and so he had to save half of it or whatever.
Yes, and he couldn't find it. Rashad, it was the funniest thing watching Brandon Sprague run around. It was like, you have a son. It was probably like watching your son when he's like two or three and he comes up to you and he's like, Dad, where's this toy? And you're like, why don't you go look for it? He was looking in the worst spots for a sandwich.
Looking in the garbage, under the couch.
No, he was looking in between the couch cushions at one point. Like someone had somehow gotten his sandwich in between the couch.
And so we still don't have a culprit.
No, I don't know. I assumed he finished it like we did.
I don't believe he found it. He was running up and down in sales trying to find it. I think at one point, like it turned into like a mad goose chase. Other people were looking for it with him. I think that it's possible authorities may have been notified. There might be a bolo out right now for a sandwich.
I guarantee somebody that
reader board,
whomever ate it, helped them look. I can almost guarantee whoever ate it helped them look. It's like, oh man, where'd you leave it? Yeah, I'll help you. Yeah, you check over here. I'll find it over here. He's wiping his mouth.
I was lining up. I was lining up interviews for the golf show, trying to tape stuff, doing other things, and he's like trying to like call me.
Where's
my sandwich?
He was here until noon.
It was a Reggie.
Could not
Reggie Deluxe.
Yeah, man. Hey, man. Listen, I might be here for a little bit trying to find that too.
That's a top tier sandwich. I'm gonna have to
now
try
you're
it.
48 hours old. That's not gonna taste very good.
Oh yeah, no, it's old now. But I mean, after 24, I'm still knocking it down. So that's just me, man. So the Lakers are lucky enough to have themselves an owner, a new owner at least, man. Some owner that's willing to pay upwards $10 billion for the franchise. That's the valuation for it, which isn't super surprising. Right. I think a lot of us saw the Celtics went a couple of years. Last year? Was it last year
the Celtics were sold? Yeah, they went last year. Yeah, last
year, $6.1 billion.
I think it got finalized this year.
Yeah, Wyckoff, I believe is his name.
Yeah, it was weird because like the old owners, so for those that don't know, the guy, Mark Walter, who just bought the Lakers, he already had a minority stake.
Yeah, he had a minority stake. And then if the Buss family was ready to sell, they had the right of first refusal.
Yes. Right.
So they did a valuation of it. Now, Jeannie Buss, well, I think they're still going to hold on to 15%. Yes. She will remain the governor for the immediate time being.
Exactly.
But yeah.
And I believe the Celtics had a similar thing like this, except they went around whoever the other guy. There was another guy who wanted to be like Walters. Yeah. He was a minority owner. When the Grusbecks sold, he wanted to buy. And he must not have had it in his contract like Walters
did,
where
he
gets first
Mark
refusal.
Cuban got, when Cuban gave up, you know, control of the Mavs, he got hip checked to the side. So, but I think. One, Mark Walters a little bit more. He understands how revered the Buss family is in Lake Oswego, the Lakers are in Los Angeles. Right. So he will be sensitive to that.
He's also not the most forward-facing owner.
No,
he's not.
He let Magic be kind of the face of the Dodgers.
Right. He's the type of owner that he's the opposite of Jerry Jones. Like he doesn't want to be the face, because he is the majority owner of the Dodgers.
Dodgers,
yep.
And
Sparks.
Also the Sparks, and also owns the Cadillac Formula One team. So sports are not foreign to him. Like he understands what he's taking over.
He wants to go find the right people, the smartest people, the most innovative people in that particular sport, and do what he has to do to bring them in, and then let them call the shots on the plan, and obviously, but then he'll be there and go through the plan. It's like, all right, and contingencies, and okay, what if this happens? What, you know, how do you leave yourself wiggle room? How do you, if it doesn't pan out, then how do you pivot? All of those sorts of things. But it'll be very different. Obviously, each sport unique. With, you know, with the Dodgers, there's no salary cap.
Right.
And they have the most absurd local TV deal in the major leagues.
Well, and they say the Lakers is even bigger.
They have the
when
best local
the
TV deal in the NBA.
He's a great puppet master, too, if you really think about it. Because I didn't know what Walter looked like, Mark Walter, before Thursday or Wednesday when the news broke that the sale would be
everybody true. Googled him.
I had to look up who this guy was. And what should terrify the NBA is the Lakers are probably the most iconic brand. If they're not number one, they're number two to the Celtics, right?
Maybe the Yankees in there somewhere, yeah.
I guess I should say in the NBA.
Okay.
So when it comes to the NBA, they also get the most free agents because they are in where all NBA players want to be. Like, if you want to be a superstar, you're in LA, you can play basketball. You know, if you want to do a little bit of rapping, you can go and rap on the side. If you want to hang out with movie stars, TV stars, you can do all that. There's a status symbol about being in LA that was already going to bring in free agents. Now you have an owner who has deep pockets. Because the problem with the Buss family was, as wealthy as they weren't very liquid, right? Like, everyone talked about them being a mom-and-pop organization, and it's like, yes, in theory, they are, because they don't have, you know, that Uncle Stevie money in the MLB, where it's just like, they can throw money, they can be in the luxury tax as much as they want. Like, they had to be smart about how they use their money, right? They don't necessarily have to do that or be quite as smart, because you have an owner that can pay those luxury tax payments, that isn't afraid to go into the second apron. But I think the most important thing that Lakers fans can be excited about with this is look at his ownership of the Dodgers. What have the Dodgers done? And Swag can attest to this. They have gone out and signed a lot of big name free agents for a lot of money, but deferred their payments. Yeah. So they're not having to pay them as much right now. They can pay them later on. And that's not something you can do in the NBA, but in the MLB, you can. And so what you see the Dodgers do is take advantage of a loophole in the system. And that's because Walters put people in his front office in a position to find those loopholes and then take advantage of them. And he's willing to do that. So now imagine what he can do if he brings in the right front office people in the NBA to find different loopholes that they can take advantage of, right? Is it going to be the same as the deferred payment? No, but there are flaws in the system. In the NHL, if you have a player get hurt and he misses time during the season, his salary cap hit comes off the books or is at a prorated rate. You just saw the Florida Panthers win because they were able to go sign Seth Jones and Brad Marchand because a guy like Matthew Tkachuk was hurt. So his salary cap hit didn't count. So they could afford to pay those two guys for the last fourth of the season, and then they get all three of those superstars during the postseason. They took advantage of that. Now the Lakers are going to have some of the deepest pockets in the NBA and have some of the smartest people in the NBA to come in and take advantage of whatever loopholes get left out in the NBA contract negotiation type stuff.
Boy, you're so smart, Will.
I have my
Look
moments.
At you. Look at you.
Still can't read a compass. Man.
I love it, bro. I love it. So people might be asking, why the hell are we talking about the Lakers? Well, because this is one franchise that was up for sale, and we obviously know there's a local one here up for sale too. The Lakers got themselves a great billionaire owner. What will the Blazers get? What do you want more than that? We'll talk about that next right here, Dirt and Sprague, 1080 The Fan. 7:17 on this beautiful Oregon Friday, 6:20, the day after everybody's day off on Juneteenth. Happy belated Juneteenth. I'm not sure what we can say and can't say for those days.
How many people do you think are at work today?
Like, Us?
I was going to say, it's probably just us. Like, was it last year that the 4th was on a Thursday? And then everyone had to come back on a Friday? How many people really work the Friday after a holiday? When you have that random Veterans Day, obviously has this from time to time. I'm trying to think of other holidays. Because most holidays, you know, you bookend it, you observe it on the Friday or you observe it on the Monday. But when you have that weird, like, middle of the week, especially when you have it on, like, a Tuesday, so people would take off that Monday before, or in this case, a Thursday, and then you got Friday. How many people truly come back?
Depends on the holiday, right? Like, if you're telling me the 26th of December is a Friday, not going to work.
No.
Sorry. You know, if you're telling me, like, you know, all of a sudden, 4th of July, you know, is
the worst
on
is when it's on a Tuesday or a Wednesday.
Yeah, like, yeah. I'm not going to work on Thursday. I'm sorry. I'm taking a couple of days because, for me, those are drinking holidays. It's really like the 4th of July, Christmas,
all
Thanksgiving.
Drinking holidays.
You know, those are drinking holidays, right? So if I'm going to drink on the holiday, I'm really going to go for it. So I'm probably not planning to go to work the next day.
Yeah.
That's just me.
No, I think sneaky, the day you want off isn't the 4th. It's the 5th. Like,
oh, for sure.
This year, yes. It doesn't matter because the 4th of July is on a Friday. Right. So it's like, hey, you're getting that time off anyways, right? But like last year, when you have the 4th of July on a Thursday, I'd use my sick time or vacation time, I would use it on Friday on purpose. Cause it's like, I would rather go to work on the 4th. Like, give me the morning shift. I'll come in, I'll do what I need to do, get done. I'll have a good time on the 4th at night. And then I'm going to need, I'm going to need some Alka-Seltzer. I'm going to need some ibuprofen. I'm going to need to sleep off my enjoyment of my holiday.
See, that's what forward-thinking supervisors do for, because they can make things like that happen, right? They can say, you know what, guys, we're going to observe Thursday, you know, as a holiday too. And we're going to give you that day off. That's what great leadership does. Currently, that's what Portland is looking for. Mm-hmm. They're looking for great leadership up top, which is ownership. Jody Allen is currently still sitting in that position, has made it known that she is trying to sell the Blazers. Obviously, the pick that everybody wanted here in Portland was Uncle Phil, Phil Knight, the co-founder of Nike. Obviously, he doesn't want it anymore in his old age. Time has kind of passed. He's over it.
Mm-hmm.
That said, we're looking around the NBA at some of these new owners or newer owners. What do you want from your owner? Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of different archetypes that you could, you know, kind of ask for.
Right.
But I think they're all very, very good in what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But it really depends on what we're looking for as Blazer fans. Do you want the business person? Right. You know, somebody who comes from a business background and everything is about the bottom line and about the next venture and all those things. And often kind of adopts a lot of like corporate data-driven approaches and stuff like that to do stuff.
The Stanton, the A's owner, the, hey, come in, we're going to get as much money as possible, but not pay either.
Do you want the fanatic, which is ultimately what Uncle Phil was, and somebody who just loves the sport so much? You know, they may be a little bit crazy, impulsive, like most fans, you know, make a lot of emotional decisions, but you see that they're invested in what to do. Do you want the local hero? You know, somebody that may have played or may have done some stuff locally, a local businessman to do the things. Do you want the tech guru? You know, somebody that's forward thinking and everything. What do you think? And Swag, you know, I'll ask you first, just because you've got the most Blazers experience out of any of us here. You've seen it all, you know, or most all. I don't want to date you like that, but you've seen most of it in Portland.
I think the biggest thing, I definitely think you want somebody that has some level of experience in modern sports franchise ownership in the 21st century.
Right.
I think whatever, wherever it comes from. Understand, because a big piece of this for the Blazers in terms of revenue income is going to be what they do with their local, you know, their local broadcasting. Do they go, you know, I don't know how long the deals are with K2 and everything that they've got set up there, but they certainly need to maximize that, especially in a market like this, a market that is as crazed. The other thing is how good of a talent evaluator are they in terms of finding top level executives and management?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you have to be able to find.
And so what are the other companies? What are the other ventures that this person or people have been involved in? And what is the track record of, you know, finding the right people, and are they then able to keep them? Are they turning over people every 2 years? I don't know that that's beneficial for a team. Like, what the Blazers need more than anything is stability, and finding somebody who, and establishing who can be the face and voice of the franchise, whether it's your head coach, whether it's your general manager, whether it's the owner themselves, whether it's the team president, but find one consistent voice that's going to be out there. And when it's time to go before the public and declare, this is the path we are taking, you have the right person delivering that message. Fans will still, whether or not they believe it can happen or whatever, but that's been the biggest piece that's been lacking since Jody assumed.
Let me ask you control. Both this. Let me ask you both this. Do you feel like it's in, because I
don't care if it's somebody local. I don't care where.
That's what I was about
from.
To ask.
I right. don't care that, at I
was,
this point.
I was going to ask if being local was a feather in the cap, only because, like, I want somebody that cares about this franchise. I don't necessarily mean a fanatic of the team, but I want somebody who has
like
some
Paul
type
cared.
Of roots towards not just sports, but towards this team. Because I think when you have when you just love the sport, I can say, well, how long until we can move? Like, how long until we can figure out how to break our lease and get out of here or something like that? I don't want an owner that's going to come in and say and do what, you know, Clay Bennett did in OKC and said, right, man, we're moving to Oklahoma City instead of Seattle. Like, that's not – but outside of that, Clay Bennett's done everything else the right way. You hired – like you said, Swag, you hired smart people.
Yep.
You put them in positions to run your franchise, and then you stepped away.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the state legislature passed this proclamation of making the Blazers a priority. I don't know what purpose that serves, but okay, great. As far as – but where it's relevant is – the city now owns the facility, so if you are coming in as a potential buyer, you already need to know, all right, am I going to work with the city and renovate the entire Rose Quarter?
Yeah.
To do that, is there a – that's going to be the biggest thing. If that person, people, group, whoever leads that group comes in and they have a plan, either – we're going to go build somewhere else in but Portland and recognize the rabid fan base and understands what they need to do to re-energize it and bring it back to the Blazer Maniacs of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And I think that's the one thing that you should be looking for if somebody goes back and understands how much this fan base wants to love the Blazers and be right, all about the Blazers. It's still there. That they just... they don't know how to focus that energy. They haven't known how to focus that energy. And the product on the floor has been difficult. The lack of a voice from ownership and leadership and direction, they don't know what to do with it. The minute you see it, I think a potential owner will understand the value of keeping the franchise there.
I think there is a value in looking at what Mark Walter has done with the Dodgers and looking for your version of that.
Right.
Right? Like, you're not going to get someone local to buy this team. It just doesn't seem like Phil's too old. NVIDIA guy doesn't care. Right? So you're going to have an outside group that buys the team. So you want an owner that isn't afraid to go out and spend money, but also is smart enough to hire the right people. You talked about Bennett, right? Bennett hires Presti and then lets Presti figure it out himself. And remember, Presti has gone through two or three different runs with this team. He was in Seattle as the GM and has moved to Oklahoma City and he helped build the KD, Russell Westbrook, Harden team. He helped build the Westbrook, Paul George team. And now he's helped build this version. And what Bennett has done is just said, hey, man, you need a couple years where we're in trouble? That's fine. Just figure it out. I trust you. I believe in you. I believe in your plan. And he's been able to do that. So you need to find someone who's able to do that. But I think the most important thing that this new ownership group does, that this previous ownership has not done a good job of since Paul has left, you need to bring back the former Blazers. You need to have someone that's coming in and talking about the franchise, that clearly loves the franchise. When you look at what Walters has done with the Dodgers, I understand that it's not a Dodger, but is there anyone more LA than Magic Johnson?
No, there's not.
No, and he's beloved in that city. He's beloved across the country. And when I think of the Dodgers ownership group, I don't think of Mark Walters. I think of Magic because he gets the message out that they want. So can you bring in a Blazer? I don't know who that former Blazer would be. Is it a Terry Porter? Is it a Clyde Drexler? Are you able to mend that relationship? Are you able to bring in a Brandon Roy? Do you mend the relationship with LaMarcus Aldridge? I don't know what Blazer you bring in. It doesn't even have to be a star, right? But can you bring in a former Blazer that the city loves and that the city will listen to?
Well, we'll see. We got a little bit to find out. And so hopefully LA got an owner. Hopefully the Blazers will get one too. Coming up next, man, LeBron says something crazy about ring culture. I guess we'll talk about that.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker on The Fan is poured by Pelican Brewing. Experience your hops differently with Hard Hops Blackberry. Hop-infused hard seltzers.
Pelican Brewing cracks open today's Daily Ticker with a Pelicano. Discover Pelican's summer seasonal cerveza and drink in refreshment. Rashad, I had my first ever Pelicano 2 weekends ago. Went
really?
To the beach. Not only did I go to the beach, so it was as fresh as it could possibly be, I specifically knew that when I went to the beach, I had to have a Pelicano because I love a good cerveza in the summer. It was nice. It was sunny. It was great out. It might be, sneaky, one of my favorites, if not my favorite, beer that I've had this summer.
Well, I mean, if there's any place to break it open, the beach is probably the very best place to enjoy anything. So,
100%.
So, absolutely. I don't know if there's, especially on a nice day, unlike today, you know, I don't know if there is a better tasting just beer just immediately.
Then just go in and grab a cerveza. It comes in a nice, clear bottle.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. To the point now where, like, if I find a sixer, if I'm like, you know, at the store or something, I go and grab it. Like, I'm putting everybody on, all my buddies, everyone's getting a taste of the Pelican Brewing's Pelicano. It's fantastic. So for today's Daily Ticker, normally, obviously, you'd have an interview, but LeBron said some interesting things that Rashad and I wanted to talk about when it comes to rings, right? And as someone who has no rings, not married, I think it's interesting his take that he has brought in. LeBron kind of came in with a poo-poo, if you will, of ring culture. And Swag has it, and he's going to play it for us right now.
A ring is a team accomplishment. Right. I don't know where it started. It's just it's a long conversation, especially when it comes to, like, you know, me individually. Right. I don't know why it's discussed so much in our sport. You tell me, you know, Allen Iverson and Charles Barkley and Steve Nash, you know, our wasn't unbelievable. Like, oh, they can't be talked about or discussed with these guys because this guy won one ring or won two rings or won. Like, it's just weird to me. It's like saying Peyton Manning can't be in the same room with Brady or Mahomes because he only has one ring. Barry Bonds never won a World Series. So. You can't sit here and tell me that he's not the greatest baseball player to ever touch a bat.
You can text in the show with your own opinion on ring culture, 503-864-6326. That is the Fan text line, or you can head on over to YouTube and type in the chat there as well. I don't understand why in the NBA the ring culture is valued so much more than others. It almost becomes its own individual thing, and maybe you can point me more to this, Rashad. Did it start with MJ, and because of the way that MJ did it, kind of felt more solo, or he was so much more elevated as a superstar than the rest of his teammates that it became an individual accomplishment? Because I do agree with LeBron that you can't win these titles without it being a team.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'll go before MJ. I think it started with Magic. I think it honestly started with
Magic and Bird.
And go before that, it started with the Celtics dynasty and Bill Russell. Like, the fact that Bill Russell is, if you look up, like, the stat line between Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, Swag, who's the better player?
Wilt.
Just by looking at the stats, right?
Yes.
Wilt Chamberlain. However, who do they say is the greatest winner of all time?
Yeah.
It's Bill Russell. It's easy. And so that's when we start looking at rings as the end-all, be-all of everything. And then you move to the 80s, and Magic or Bird was probably the best player in the 80s, you know, at that point. Magic had all the rings. Mm-hmm. Magic was considered the champion. So because you got the most rings, you're considered the best. I don't want to hear this from LeBron. LeBron, now, there are certain guys that
narrative
this doesn't
switch for
there, there's certain there. Guys that this yeah. doesn't exist for, right?
Yeah.
Like, we look at Dirk. Nobody ever said that Dirk didn't have a tattoo on his back that said chosen one.
Yeah.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. he didn't have all this expectation and all these ESPN covers and Slam magazine covers and stuff like that about him being the greatest player ever, potentially, and stuff like that. He didn't have that. So that one ring separates Dirk from everybody else. Dirk never got in front of a crowd and said, "We're not going to win one, not two, not three." Like, he didn't do that. LeBron did. LeBron yeah. said he wanted to be better than Jordan. He wanted to be the best player in the world. That means winning more than six championships, winning at least six championships. So this ring culture, he created it. When he left, if he'd have stayed in Cleveland and just showed that, man, I just want to play basketball.
Yeah, if he had been Dirk.
If he'd have been Dirk, right?
And maybe he wins one or two.
Nobody would have said anything. But no, but he went to Miami in search of a championship. He went to LA in search of a championship. So don't get mad now that you're at the end of your career. You've been to the finals, what, 10 times now. You've got four rings. You know that that number five is not coming. He's not going to catch Kobe. That's a wrap at this point. He's not going to catch Kobe unless they get something crazy on the Lakers, which is now they got a new owner. Incredibly plausible that they pull somebody else at this point. But he's not going to get number five and six, more than likely. And now the narrative is starting to become more, well, Jordan is the best player because he's got six rings. Now it's like, well, wait, why does rings have to be the – come on, LeBron. Pick a side, bro.
Well, and I think that's the most frustrating thing when it comes to LeBron. It is some of his own dumb arguments. Like, he clearly cares about his legacy, right? He cares about being number 100%. One. Like, as soon as he won that 2016 NBA Finals with Cleveland – he's at the parade and he's like, I am now the greatest player of all time. And now, like, he has his cronies going out. The new one is that, well, Chris Bosh wasn't a superstar. Chris Bosh was for sure a superstar in Toronto. And this, I'm a LeBron guy. Like, to me, I grew up watching LeBron his entire career. Didn't really see MJ. My knowledge of MJ, like, eyeballs watching, not highlights, is MJ with the Wizards. So to me, and most people in my generation, LeBron is our GOAT. Right? Unless you grew up a Lakers fan.
Or unless Paul George is your GOAT.
Which is probably just for one of Paul's kids. Probably not all of them. But what LeBron continues to do, and I think is so frustrating for people like me who want to defend him, is that it's always on the forefront of his mind. It's like when you're messing with your buddy and you're like, hey, dude, you're mad. And they're like, no, I'm not. It's like, yeah, man, you're mad. Kinda. No, I'm not. I swear I'm not mad. I'm not mad that you say MJ's better care. Than me. He just keeps trying to move the narrative, move the goalposts for him to be the best. And it's like, dude, half of the brilliance of MJ was that he didn't talk about greatness. He didn't talk about what his legacy was. Like, unless I'm wrong here, he just kind of let it go. And then everyone else built
it. Well, Matt, Jordan's, I guess, allure came from the fact that it was other people that told about how great he was. Mm-hmm. Reggie Miller called him the Black Cat. You know, there was a certain
Black Jesus.
The Black Jesus. Yeah, Black Jesus, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, Jordan was legend because you listen to all these stories now, these old timers that are telling these stories about Jordan, and it's always, bro, that dude was so cold. Like, he came over to us and said, who guarded me? Oh, 50. Oh, like the little stories he told. I looked over at the bench after I scored my 50th point and said, I want my money. Like, little things that Jordan did is that's what builds that character, that allure. It's almost Paul Bunyan-esque. Like, we've seen LeBron, and he's done some out-of-this-world type things.
Well, when Jordan came up, I mean, I still remember watching the NCAA title game against Georgetown when he hit the shot, and he wasn't – he was a phenom, but he wasn't as heralded as LeBron was when he was in high school. You know, the old joke was Dean Smith was the only guy that could keep MJ under 20 in a game because they had Sam Perkins and Kenny Smith and,
they were
the factory at that
point. James Worthy, you know what I'm saying? They had a squad on that North Carolina team. And, yes, in college it hampers you from being the score that you want to be.
Teammate. There.
No, it wasn't until he really got Pippen and had to learn how to depend on somebody else or at least work with other people but that's the one thing LeBron can say. Like, we have to also understand this, and I know we have to break. There are the parts of LeBron's game that are much better than Michael Jordan. He is a better rebounder.
As a basketball player, he's been more comprehensive and more productive for a longer period of time for his teams than Michael Jordan, and that can't be refuted.
And at the end of the day, the only thing that Michael Jordan can truly hold over LeBron are the rings.
Yeah.
That's really it. He's in every other stat, man, LeBron has surpassed Jordan in everything. And so I think now rings are the only thing that separate the greatest of all time.
I understand what
he's
saying. I don't know. He's, you know.
He's not wrong,
he's
though.
Just parsing language because he said it's a team thing. And as the best players of the game, not only do you produce stats and lead your team, but do you elevate the play of the group around you to do so in order to get those championships? And I think that is a differentiating factor when you get to the all-time greats. And this is something that will be discussed on the show Tuesday when you hear it. Mm-hmm. that, yeah, everybody, and trying to compare the eras of the NBA is one of the more difficult tasks to do. There was the 60s and 70s when there were, I don't know, 12 or 14 teams, and the Celtics had everybody. Then you had the Bird Magic era that made the game entertaining and must-see TV.
Right, you weren't on tape delay anymore.
And then you had the Jordan era to the LeBron era. You know, then you went through the Jordan era where it became football on a court for a while. And now you have the current day game that is all about analytics and maximizing point value of every shot.
Yeah.
How do you compare all that?
No, well, and it's not fair to compare anything.
No.
The different generations, which is why it's always the fun debate. It's why there are shows at the national level that this is what they are going to talk about for the next 2 months once the NBA Finals is over on Sunday. It's a fun conversation to have with your boys when we're out at the beach or when I'm hanging out with my buddies and I've got a nice Pelicano, right?
Yeah, two or three of them. Yeah.
We're debating this. Half the time, we're not even debating this. We're debating who the best players were from our high school days. So that's why I think that this conversation is always fun. And it can lead to, if done correctly, at least the common grounds understanding, which hopefully we were able to get there. Daily Ticker brought to you by Pelican Brewing, born at the beach. When we come back, someone was going a little bit too fast in their car.
Uh-oh.
Do we care? Next on 1080 The Fan. You've got a Will and Rashad edition of Dirt and Sprague on this Friday morning, June 20th.
Like the way that sounds, man. Dirt and Sprague coming for your gig, guys.
different gig.
Probably not. Probably not, though.
Just 2.5 weeks in, getting up this early every morning.
We'll the first day, shout out to y'all, because, again, this first day when I woke up at 4:30 and was like, what the F is happening right now, man. So I totally understand. Shout out to all you guys and shout out to everybody for listening this early in the morning on your way to work, on your way to school, class, to the babysitter, whatever.
Sprague and I have had this conversation before because I've been getting to do the Summer of Swag, thank you. And so I come in, we do the show, we're done. I always get super excited. It's like, it's 9:30 and
what are we going to do for the rest of the day, guys?
My day is done. I'm already up. Like, I'm already calling my dad, making plans with him. Oh, like, what golf course could we sneak out to? Do you want to go do that? You know, whatever. Texting my buddies that have night jobs or whatever. And Sprague goes, look, man, it's fun when you're just dropping in. You're like the uncle right now, and your brother just had a kid. And that kid is awesome when you just jump in. Yeah, here's some treats. Here's some toys. Kid loves you. And then you go home. You got to come back in and do it every single day, 5 days a week.
That's dedication.
It can definitely wear on you, and it can grind on you. We were talking over in the break about I'm driving back and forth right now to Newburgh so that I can be out there and help coach the Hawkinson Hawks football team as they're at football camp. And
go Hawks.
This story out of Cleveland kind of reminded me of a conversation that I had with a lot of our high school athletes. Shedeur Sanders. He was pulled over. It's the second time that he's been pulled over in the last 2 weeks. Now, he was caught by the Ohio State Highway Patrol. He was going 91 miles an hour in a 65 mile per hour zone. Earlier on, I think the number had been reported. Yes.
101 and a 60.
He went 101 in a 60 the other day. And I had this conversation with the boys of, I understand that you're 16, 17, and 18 years old. You got a license. I appreciate that you're willing to drive some of your younger teammates around, but we need to be careful with the cars. Bad things happen when you're going fast in a car. I get it. You're a young man. You want to drive fast. But we need to drive safely so that we're not ending up getting citations. We're not ending up in newspapers. Hey, Shedeur Sanders, 101 in a 60-mile-per-hour zone. All of that being said, I'm not as upset as I think some people are pretending to be right now about his latest traffic citations.
I'm more concerned about why he was doing 101 in a truck. Like it's almost like a pickup type. Mind you, it's a really nice
2025 Dodge.
You know, however, like I was It would have been cooler if you were going that fast in like a Lambo or like a Hellcat or something like that. All that makes sense. Mm-hmm. The fact that you were speeding like that in a truck is just moronic. You know, you super stand out, you know, if nothing else. But I don't know. It's young people doing young people stuff.
Right.
Doing idiot stuff. You know,
I'm not
like,
buying that.
Yeah, that's
you're
all.
You're
not.
No.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, like, I mean, honestly, he wasn't drunk. There was no cocaine in the car. They didn't find a gun. They didn't find anything that's like, man, speeding. Now, is speeding incredibly dangerous, having had lost a cousin from an accident?
Reckless at that
point. Yeah, absolutely, for sure. 101 is crazy, crazy reckless. Now, if they just said 101 with alcohol and his alcohol level was whatever over the limit or even at the near the limit, yeah, that's a problem. If you'd have told me there were guns or hookers.
From a football standpoint of, is he unable to judge time space?
Now that's the thing.
Does he understand how fast he's going? Is he completely oblivious? How is it going to be able to judge and being aware in the moment? If
you going that fast, you know, we all kind of push it in our car on the freeway and get up to 80 something like that and go, oh, I'm might be going a little fast here, right? Like we all know. So to push it to like 90 and to keep going, it's crazy, you know, in a truck. That's crazy work for me. However, that's stupid. I do agree with you, Swag. Like, a football player, as a leader of a team, like, that's silly. Like, that's reckless. Yeah. You're putting yourself in danger. You're putting the passenger in the car in danger. You're putting other people that are out there on the road in danger because anything can happen going that fast. You lose control.
It's now that he's not under the thumb of his father as head coach, are we going to get a better sense of whatever sense of entitlement he feels about life?
Potentially.
Yeah. I wonder, too, though, like, because they did release, or at least I saw what I thought was potentially, the dash cam footage, and he was pretty respectful about it. I think in the spectrum...
I'm more worried he's ignorant, he's oblivious,
he didn't realize he's going 91.
Yeah. I'm sorry, officer, I didn't know I couldn't do that.
Problem with that.
Which is possible.
If I'm putting an NFL franchise and future of it in your hands.
You need to be smarter.
This doesn't help him, you know, in this case, considering that he is in a quarterback battle for the number one spot.
Dylan Gabriel, you know? I don't know if he can get the football down the field, but I'm not worried about the decision-making that he will go through in assessing a team if he's able to get out there and do it.
But I also wonder, too, though, like when it comes to the spectrum of issues that you could have in a 23-year-old man, because that's what he is, when it comes to off-the-field distractions, this is very much on the, like, dude, just slow down.
Would
right?
you rather have
like,
him or John Morant right now?
Right. Or Zion. Or you know. You go down the list. I mean, I remember Marshawn Lynch is a great example, right? Marshawn Lynch was a great running back. He had issues when he was driving, right, in Buffalo and in Seattle. So I think that while it is a little bit of an eyebrow raise, maybe it talks about some of his decision-making off the field. I do think that to a degree, this could be something that we forget about within a week or two.
He throws his first touchdown and we're over it.
He went too fast. We've all done it. We've all been there before.
Not that damn fast. That's crazy.
That's true. That's crazy. That is fast. Well, my Camry doesn't get up that fast. There's a speedometer.
You can only go so fast in a Range Rover. That's not that fast.
We're not going to get going that fast. Hour two done. We got 1 hour left here to go on Dirt and Sprague. It is 7:57 on the Fan.